This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Welcome to New Wisco Weekend. I'm Lisa Hale, your host. Our cover story this weekend focuses on how farming for honey has been going on for thousands of years, but one local farmer is bringing modern technology into the hive. We have stories for you on Congress extending the farm bill, which is good news, but not the best news, the stress farmers face and how to navigate it, and the 78th Allison Dairyland. Speaking of dairy, Brittany Merlot has a great story for us on cheese. Pete Schwaba has our classic cinema pick of the week, and our Amanda Nimmer informs us of a very real danger to humans that's lurking on dairy and beef farms all across Wisconsin. And then the Gentlemen Grifters are our musical guests at the end of the show. But first, we're going to open up this issue of New Wisco Weekend and dig into our first story, which is a little about sports, a little about farming, and a little about entertainment. Here's Conrad Krieger.
Sunday, January 5th, actor Craig T. Nelson sang the national anthem in front of 88,000 Packer fans at Lambeau Field before the Bears and Packers kicked off. Craig is not known for his singing in his career, but more for his roles such as Coach Hayden Fox in the hit show Coach. So why did Craig sing the national anthem? Well, he has a new role that may interest northeastern Wisconsin. Green and Gold, a movie based in Wisconsin and stars Nelson as the lead. The synopsis on the website says,
"Foreclosure looms over Wisconsin dairy farmer Buck, played by Craig T. Nelson. With mounting debt and the land his family has cultivated for four generations at risk, Buck refuses to give up his legacy without a fight. Buck's granddaughter, played by Madison Lawler, works alongside him, but dreams of a career in music. Her aspirations are fanned by an emerging friendship with a famous musician, but chasing her dreams might take her far from the farm. With time running out, Buck places a daring bet on his beloved Green Bay Packers winning the championship, risking it all to save everything he holds dear."
"This ain't your land."
"Well, when you don't pay your loan, it becomes my land."
"How much do we owe the bank?"
"I will make a little wager with you. Packo all the way, I will give you another year interest-free. And if they lose, you sign everything over to me."
"Take it."
Nelson shares that Green and Gold is more than just a role for him.
"It was meaningful to me just from the standpoint of being able to represent that lifestyle and who they are, who my ancestors are."
The movie is directed by brothers Anders and David Linwall, who say the film highlights the stories of hardworking farmers confronting growing challenges in today's economy. In an interview on Fox 11, Anders says this about Green and Gold.
"You know, I think it really came from our grandfather was a dairy farmer, and we grew up as lifelong Packers fans. But what we really wanted to do was make a story that brought hope and was about the folks that we grew up around and just inspired people with goodness. So
Green and Gold hits theaters nationwide January 31st of this year. For New Wisco Weekend, I'm Conrad Krieger.
Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on that farm he had some chicks, E-I-E-I-O. With a cluck cluck here, a cluck cluck there, loud as they could be. And when those chicks got out of line, chicken fricassee."
It started as a beauty pageant following World War II, but now is a position that is used as the voice of agriculture for Wisconsin. Melissa Kay reports.
The next Allison Dairyland will begin in July, and the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection is already looking for the next candidate. The 77th Allison Dairyland, Haley Heinzel, said she's excited to work with the top candidates applying for the position.
"We are opening applications for the 78th Allison Dairyland, and so I'm really excited to be seeing who is interested in becoming Allison Dairyland next year."
The position requires extensive travel throughout the state while promoting Wisconsin's agriculture industry and its impact on the state economy. Allison Dairyland is not only about sharing the stories of agriculturists, but also inspiring the next generation to continue the legacy. Applications are now being accepted for the position of the 78th Allison Dairyland and must be received by 4:30 p.m. on January 31st. You can find out more at aliceindairyland.com.
And I can promise you, those animals ever get out of line, we'll have a mulligan stew. How about you?
You're listening to New Wisco Weekend on WGBW and WISS.
In 2024, the United States was home to 87.1 million cattle, and about 3.5 million of those cows reside in Wisconsin. New Wisco Weekend commentator Amanda Nimmer thinks that is a dangerous statistic.
You know what this is. Everybody knows what this is. This means a shark has been spotted. So it's time to get out of the water. And with many thanks to the 1975 cinematic masterpiece that is Jaws by the one and only Steven Spielberg, this irrational fear of sharks lingers, even when you lived in a landlocked state, like we do here in Wisconsin, especially in this Northeast division where it's just farm country wherever you look. Who hasn't played the classic game of spotting cows? There's a cow, there's a cow, there's a cow. And now it's ingrained in your brain every time you see a cow to be like, there's a cow. Or if you're like me, go, moo moos! I think mine's more fun, but you can also simply say, hey, a cow. Cows are everywhere. And quite frankly, you should be more afraid of them. Because did you know that cows kill more people than sharks? It's true. A study done in 2019 says there have been approximately 5 deaths caused by sharks annually. Meanwhile, horses kill about 20 people a year, and cows, 22. 22 deaths annually from cows. It's still a low number, but if you do the math, that's 4 times more than sharks. And I know this almost firsthand, because my sister was attacked by a cow. I shouldn't be laughing, because this was a very serious matter. This cow stalked her when she was working in the milking farm. For days, it stalked her. They had to go look back on security cameras in order to see that it was legitimately sussing her out like prey. And then it waited until just the right moment to charge her and headbutt her into a pole. It could have killed her. But instead, she suffered with a couple fractured ribs and a very messed up back for quite some time. And that cow left its job at the dairy farm because it wasn't its first offense and moved into the non-vegetarian district. So am I trying to make you more afraid of cows than you really should be? No, I'm just giving you the facts. Cows kill more than sharks. Who would have thunk it? But cows are still fun. They're still sweethearts. In fact, some people describe them as big dogs because of their playful behavior and their ability to frolic when they're let out of the barn for the winter onto the grass. We've all seen the video. We've all awed at it. Don't you lie to me. You know what? Just ask my sister, because I bet you she doesn't even hate cows after being attacked by one.
A lot of times people get hurt by cows because cows are just big puppies and they don't know like how big they are. So if they get excited to see you, next thing you know, you have a 1,500-pound animal barreling towards you just to say hi like a puppy would.
And if you go up the list, crocodiles gobble up 1,000 people a year. And I'm pretty sure that's just mostly Floridians they're eating. I should know. For some reason, my fiancé decided to wrestle one. I don't know. I guess it's like a Floridian thing, which might be why the numbers are so high. But even they aren't at the top of the list. The living being that you should be afraid of, that isn't human. Let that sink in for a moment. Are mosquitoes. Mosquitoes kill hundreds of thousands more people than sharks, cows, crocodiles ever do. Besides maybe the deer that people tend to hit on the highway. So say it with me. Mosquitoes suck and cows are adorable puppy-like creatures that you don't turn your back on.
And also, California just shouldn't have cows, and they're not happier. We take good care of our cows. They all have names, and they're all treated very, very nicely.
Exactly. Happy cows come from Wisconsin. From New Wisco Weekend, I'm Amanda Nimmer, and there you go.
This weekend features National Milk Day, a time to celebrate because Wisconsin would not be known as the cheese capital of the world without it. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot explains that cheese is not made from spoiled milk.
It's a common misconception that cheese is made from milk that's gone bad, when in reality, the process of cheese making is curdling fresh milk and then allowing it to ferment and age. And temperatures simply can't be too hot, because warm weather cheesemaking is tricky. First of all, high humidity and heat can lead to increased risk for contamination. Bacteria and yeasts love a warm and humid environment. It feeds and ferments the lactose into lactic acid, and once that happens, the good bacteria is out. What follows is other opportunistic bacterias and yeasts overtaking the cheese. So producers can't doodle in the barn and must limit time between udder and cheese pot and never let milk sit out for more than 30 minutes. However, cheeses that are salted early in the process, like cheddar or feta, well, they tend to work better than the rest in those higher temperatures. Mold simply grows really fast. Though not necessarily dangerous, it surely doesn't taste good. So when eating cheese, it's best enjoyed at room temperature, typically about 67 to 70 degrees. So if you want to enjoy a summer cheese board outdoors, keep it inside until right before you dig in. Cheese that's warmed up too much or starts to sweat, the fat is separating from the solids in the cheese, and it looks like little droplets of moisture on the surface. The flavor and texture may be quite off. So what you can do is serve cheese on a marble slab. Not only will it look good, but it'll naturally cool your precious cheeses too. Okay, so this may sound cheesy, but did you know that one Wisconsin county is using a cheese byproduct to treat slick winter roads? Greene County has been using cheese brine to pre-wet roads before putting down salt treatments for about 20 years now. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation Highway Commissioner says it activates the salt quicker. WisDOT gets the brine from local cheese factories. They also say that the brine is helping Greene County be more eco-friendly when treating the roads, saying that they need less salt afterwards. And they are now the second least user of salt in the entire state of Wisconsin, typically using more than 100,000 gallons of cheese brine to treat the roads. For New Wisco Weekend, I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
Fields in the hot summer sun, over by the gate, Lordy, here she comes with a basket full of chicken and a big cold jug of sweet tea.
You can check out all the episodes of New Wisco Weekend at civicmedia.us and also find them on Spotify and wherever you get your podcasts. This is New Wisco Weekend on WGBW and WISS.
She ain't a fooling me. She thinks my tractor's sexy. It really turns her on.
When we come back, ag stress, the farm bill, and a classic movie pick, plus our cover story on A-Frame Acres. This is New Wisco Weekend.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
This is New Wisco Weekend on Civic Media radio stations WGBW and WISS. I'm Lisa Hale, your host. Coming up, the current farm bill was extended by Congress recently, but a new bill is needed. Then, ag businesses have unique stressors they have to mitigate. Right now, Pete Schwabba's classic movie pick of the week.
New Wisco Weekend presents Pete Schwabba's classic movie pick of the week.
Are you in the mood for a good remake? One of my favorites is this week's classic pick. The film Heaven Can Wait is a descendant of the stage play Here Comes Mr. Jordan, which eventually made it to the silver screen in 1941. 1978's Heaven Can Wait stars Hollywood legend Warren Beatty, who plays Joe Pendleton, a quarterback for the LA Rams, who is about to play in his first Super Bowl. While riding his bike to rehab his knee, Pendleton collides with an oncoming car in a tunnel, or so we think. An overly eager escort from Heaven, played by Buck Henry, pulls Pendleton's soul soul out of his body early to spare him the physical pain. The film is a hilarious adventure as the escort, with the help of his boss, Mr. Jordan, played by the perfectly cast James Mason, tries to find a body for Pendleton's soul, eventually settling on heartless millionaire Leo Farnsworth, who is poisoned by his wife Julia, played by Diane Cannon, and her lover, Farnsworth's assistant, Tony Abbott, played by Charles Grodin. The two are hilarious as they can't figure out why Farnsworth is so hard to take out.
You locked me in a closet.
Only for a moment.
What did you say to him?
I told him you saw a mouse.
Oh, my God.
But darling, look, I'm not very good at spur-of-the-moment alibis. I'm very calm. I'm not very good.
What's the difference? He knows anyway. He's probably got enough evidence to lock us away for the rest of our lives.
Darling, I don't understand this. I saw him inhale the nose spray. Two full squirts in each nostril.
He never really inhaled it, did he? He overheard it somehow. That must have been what had happened. I mean, maybe he's got us bugged right now. Maybe everything is recorded.
No, why darling. Not? We're not being recorded. An electronics expert sweeps the place every day. He's afraid of being bugged too, darling.
He's playing with us. That's what it is. This is a game. Oh, my God. He's playing a game with us. That's what it is. You locked me in a closet. What? Ah!
Hello.
Mr. Farnsworth would like to see you now.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Would you excuse me, Mrs. Farnsworth?
Yes, of course, Mr. Abbott.
In an effort to keep his dream of playing quarterback in the Super Bowl alive, Beatty's character, now in the body of the rich Farnsworth, buys the Rams. Further complicating the plot is that Farnsworth falls in love with Betty Logan, an activist protesting one of Farnsworth's business ventures, played by Julie Christie. The film is an interesting enough story that is well acted and hilarious at times, thanks to the comedy chops of Henry, Grodin, Cannon, and Jack Warden, who plays a football coach. The film was co-directed by Beatty and Buck Henry, and co-written by Beatty and heavy hitter writer Elaine May. The collaboration of all these talented folks nabbed 9 Oscar nominations and 1 win for art direction. Heaven Can Wait is the perfect film as the NFL playoffs get underway, or if you need a laugh or like a good love story. And it's this week's classic movie pick of the week. For more movie and entertainment talk, join me weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. for Nightlight here on WISS and WGBW. For New Wisco Weekend, I'm Pete Schwab.
Scarecrow on a wooden cross, blackbird in the barn. 400 empty acres that used to be my farm. Grew up like my daddy did, my grandpa cleared this land. When I was 5, I walked a fence while grandpa held my hand. Rain on the scarecrow, blood on the plow. This land for the nation, this land made me proud. Son, I'm just sorry there's no legacy for you now. Rain on the scarecrow.
Managing stress is a challenge for anyone today, and it's especially challenging for farmers when so many things are out of their control. But with the right support and resources, it's possible to navigate these pressures and reduce stress. Civic Media's Joanne Krulatz has the story.
Navigating Your Ag Business from Stress to Success is an online course sponsored by UW-Madison Division of Extension's Farm Management Program and the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection's Farm Center. Joy Kirkpatrick is a UW-Madison Division of Extension Farm Management Outreach Specialist.
The idea is that, you know, farmers have all kinds of things that can be stressors, and they can be different for each farm. So this program really helps farmers think about what their unique stressors might be in the moment and help them put together a plan that can help them address that stress. So, you know, one person might feel like they need to have a better handle on their financial management. Another person might be looking at a diversified enterprise, like a value-added enterprise that they might want to consider bringing into the mix of things. So it's really, while we work together and do some of our work online as a group, it still is designed so that the plan that the farmers design is specific to their situation.
By participating in this program, farmers can build a more resilient and sustainable future for their businesses and their families.
They get to define their success, right? We, from the outside, don't define what they feel like. We want them to define their own idea of what success is for them. And hopefully, with them working through that plan, it does reduce their stress and get them going. We've had people who have put together their loan documents and received a loan. We had one farm that was able to submit a grant application and receive that grant for a project that they wanted to do. Now, We have had farms that, going through it, they kind of realized that they have a lot of things that they need to address that they didn't even really think about and wasn't on the radar. So sometimes working with farms, they realize that they have several things they need to work on. So maybe it doesn't necessarily alleviate their stress completely, but it does give them more information to know how to start addressing some of those things that their awareness has grown about what they need to address.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Joanne Krulotz.
For more information about the online course, go to go.wisc.edu/NYAB. Congress passed an extension of the Farm Bill, which was a relief for many farmers. But that means they're working with benefits and prices that were negotiated 6 years ago. On top of that, President-elect Donald Trump has promised to cut government costs across the board, add potential tariffs to the equation, and experts are worried about the agriculture industry. Paul Mitchell, agriculture and economics professor at UW-Madison.
So my real worry is that agriculture will be collateral damage for the new administration as they pursue other political priorities where, you know, agriculture is not their number one priority. And they will take the cost of agricultural hurt to address these issues they want to address that would partly help them get elected.
One of the major problems with extending the old farm bill is now farmers will continue to get benefits from a law that was negotiated over 5 years ago, and the crop reference prices are outdated.
Prices have been declining on the corn and soybeans, and the process is used to create this support in these times of thin negative margins. They're out of date. Those floors were set in 2018, and you know we've gone through a lot of inflation, and so you know $1,000 isn't what it used to be.
Mitchell says farm organizations have been asking Congress to increase crop reference prices and to change the process to make it more relevant to current commodity markets. Old prices aren't the only problem with extending the current farm bill. Mitchell also says crop insurance and conservation programs are at risk. Plus, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, is still offering benefits too low to help those who need them. That's according to the Urban Institute report. For New Wisco Weekend, I'm Lisa Hale. Coming up on New Wisco Weekend, our cover story on modern technology in the ancient practice of beekeeping. But first, this weekend sees National Milk Day on January 11th. National Milk Day celebrates the very first time milk was delivered to homes inside of sterilized glass bottles back in 1878. Before then, milk storage and delivery was less than sanitary.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
This is New Wisco Weekend, and I'm your host, Lisa Hale. This issue of New Wisco Weekend is all about agriculture, one form of agriculture that's been around for decades but is getting more attention now is beekeeping. Wayne Stiegelman from A-Frame Acres is a beekeeper who appears regularly on Civic Media's Mino and the Mayor. During a recent show, he talked about how technology will save the bees.
What are the bees doing now? Because everybody asks, like, oh, what are the bees doing now? Well, honeybees are the only bee that overwinters as a colony. So, quote, they're a superorganism. So your semi-social bees, like bumblebees, the mated queen will overwinter in a hole or a grass or a twig or something like that, the wasps and so forth. So So what they're basically, when they're overwintering, you're trying to keep a bug, you know, alive when it's 0 degrees out. So basically what happens is the bees, the worker bees, are clustered around the queen, keeping her warm and everything. So to back up, to get them ready for winter, that's the whole game. So
so what do the wasps do then? Do they go, they basically siloed?
Yeah, they really? like the wasps and the bumblebees, they just kind of go into this hibernation state where they just basically, I think they go into almost like a freeze state, and then when it warms back up,
like you'd see them, like even on dandelions when I was growing up, you know, you used to catch them in little peanut butter jars, whatever. But when it was like cold, they were almost like dormant. They didn't move, but they didn't die, yeah, right?
They go into what's called a state of torpor.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like their metabolism slows way down. And then you can literally, like, if they have, like, honeybees, sometimes when it's cold, they'll get stuck on the landing board and they freeze. So you can pick them up and you can blow on them. And then they'll actually wake up. They get all excited.
That can happen.
After you blow hot air on them. So anyway, wow. so the bees actually have to stay, you know, semi-dormant. What they do is they go into this state of low metabolic state where they're clustered around the queen and everything. So the job of the beekeeper, you know, since we're pulling them out of the trees, it's our job. We're putting them in these boxes. We have to, and we're stealing their honey. You know, we people forget, like, this is a product of them trying to survive.
Okay.
So we're taking their food. This is what's in the hive. This is the honeycomb.
Right.
So their whole job throughout the entire year is to stock honey for the upcoming winter that's coming.
Ah.
So they have. And then you have us beekeepers coming and taking that honey.
How many times did you get bit this season?
Oh, every day.
How many times do you think?
50? Thousands.
Thousands.
No, I'd say hundreds.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't wear bee protective suits.
Right. No, I've seen
but I do. I do. So when you see people on TV, they call them the bee whisper.
Right.
There's no such thing as a bee whisper. If the bees want you out of their colony, they're going to get you out. Don't get me wrong. So, but if you get to know your bees, you can tell the time of the day, like the temperature, the weather, the time of the year, if there's a nectar flow coming in, because they'll basically ignore you if you respect being in their colony. Nice, move nice and slow. So I can generally harvest my honey without wearing anything. There's bees all around. I love doing that because it gets reaction from people. It's like it's like COVID. Like, you need to put protective gear on.
So do they make honey all winter too then?
No.
You literally spent all night last night watching videos on bees.
Yeah, you know, that's a problem, you know, with bees.
Yeah,
you know
how
most guys are like, my wife's like, what did you do now? Well, I signed up for this thing where I'm watching bees for 2 hours every night for the next two weeks.
Right, but let's tell people why you're watching bee videos for 2 hours a night.
I'm helping mankind.
Well, you're going to be certified as a something, right, when you watch this? You got to take a test or something?
No. So this is how this is why I'm watching bee TV. So my way of beekeeping is using technology. So I always tell people, I don't force it on people, but I try to. So my thing is, in, you know, just like anything, there's, you know, like politics, you have blip, blip. In beekeeping, you have these two groups of, I'm going to treat, I'm not going to treat, I'm going to insulate, I'm not going to insulate, Bob, because this is the theory that's been passed down.
Right.
And the information hasn't changed in 100 years. It's the same thing. So a lot of my things that I do is I watch the dairy farmers and then I incorporate it, which is great. So there's a company in Stoughton, Wisconsin called Broodminder, and they're two super duper smart guys. They're engineers, and they've recruited beekeepers from around the world, and so anyway, it's not anything crazy, but they've designed technology to be able to monitor temperature and humidity in the hives.
Ah.
Here's my beehive right here. So it's wrapped in insulation. So normally, if you look at it, like, well, how, if I asked you, well, hey, how are your bees doing? Well, I checked them 2 months ago and I think they're doing okay.
Yeah.
It's like, they don't know, because you're trying to take care of something that's behind a curtain. You have zero idea what they're doing. So what technology does with monitoring temperature tells you a lot with bees. So in this hive, there's all these little sensors, and underneath This is a scale. It weighs it. And so that cell phone is pinging all these sensors, and then the cell phone sends that up to the cloud, and then it comes, you know, on my app in the phone.
Do you have that internal workings, the thermometer, on every hive?
Every hive. I've basically dedicated my beekeeping to technology. And I honestly think technology is going to save the bees. Because you can't change your methods without knowing the data and knowing what's happening in the hive. Everyone's reactive instead of proactive. And I always tell people, I am not an expert beekeeper by any means. You know, I've been beekeeping now. This is going to be my sixth year. But what the thing is in beekeeping, like a lot of things, it's when you're teaching beekeeping, it's a lot of passed down information.
Right,
so you have,
right.
Grandpa beekeep, my dad beekeep, blah, blah, blah. And this is what you do at this time of the year. Well, we can't do that anymore because the climate's changing. And if what you're doing, is that really what they need? You don't know. So I tell people my work history is sales and marketing and business. And we all know that you can't do that successfully without knowing the data in front of you.
You're ahead of the curve on technology, right?
What I'm saying is I'm not the expert, but this is what my bees are brooding right now. No, your bees don't brood in the winter. Yeah, they do.
Right. It shows you right here.
This line right here is what you typically see in the summer. And they're brooding. Like, really? So now my question is, well, why are they brooding? So then you can go through the charts, and then I keep track of everything, when I fed, how much I fed, when I treated, and then I can kind of put the timeline together.
So if I was going to get into beekeeping, do you take this and share it with people who've got an interest?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, there's some older beekeepers in a club that were really like, you're making beekeeping not what it's supposed to be, and everything. But they're actually now it's like they're actually paying attention, because I'll say, hey, what happens during this event? And then what I'll do is like, okay, I'll monitor that and I'll come back. This is what happens with the temperature. This is what happens with the humidity. Like everyone's like, you got to have 80 to 100 pounds in your hive of honey for them to survive. It's like, no, you could get away with 60, because I'm tracking that.
I would think that after your meetings, those older guys who've been traditional with this probably go, that Wayne kid might be onto something. Because I think you've got a lot of data sheet.
And that's what Broodminder, these two engineers, is because we can't really, because again, you have two different groups, because you have non-treat, because again, right. the mites, this is the killer of the bees, right. Mites. So just like COVID, you either have to treat or you have to have natural selection take its course. Well, we can't let natural selection take its course, even though, yes,
they'll
win, and that's ultimately the way out, but you can't tell a bee farmer that, hey, you know what, let all your bees die.
Right.
So there has to be an in-between.
These bees, this is much more than Brown County or the Greater Green Bay and Winnebago County. I mean, you've got Outagamie in here now. Yeah. So
awesome. Yeah. So anyway, to make a long story short, the reason why I'm watching BTV is because we have the technology to look inside the hive. Like this is an infrared camera, so I can walk up to the hive and I can see where the cluster's at. So anyway, what we're trying to solve is what's truly killing the bees are these little demon mites. And the only way we can tell if our hives are infested right now is to go in and test and kill a bunch of bees to shake the mites off. Well, I'm helping to teach AI to identify mites in the hive with a camera that would probably be the size of the sensor. And then eventually, once the AI can catch on, and I can tell already when I watch these videos, this hive probably died because it's infested with mites and viruses. But then it will send it. Because right now, with everything that I'm doing, there's no instructions. All I see is there's a change and I need to go in there and see what's going on.
What's the chemo for the mites? Like, what are you going to do when this technology says, yeah, it's infested. Yep.
So right now, that's the thing. You have two different groups. You have treatment groups and non-treatment groups. So treating is there's synthetic miticides and organic miticides that will kill the mites, but not the bees.
Right.
And then you have your non-treaters, which don't get me wrong, that's probably the way out of this, that they're trying to breed queens and to have worker bees that have hygienic properties. Like they can actually, they'll go off, and I can see it in the hives, because bees will groom each other. And like with these with these mites, what they're trying to do is have bees that will actually go around and like pull the mites off or bite the ankles off these mites to get them out of the hive. And so now you have mite resistant bee strains, but that's going to take forever, yeah. You know, and in the meantime, you can't have bee farmers collapsing. So then that's where the treatments come in. So however you're going to take care of the mites, that's what I'm not here to talk about, because that's a whole nother issue, is that broodminder will say, hey, beekeeper, your mite levels are getting high. You better do something about it.
That's awesome. So how do people learn? I think you're going to find people interested in everybody, you know, New Year's resolution. I want to learn this. I want to learn that. But if somebody wants to kind of lean into bees a little bit more, where are you teaching?
Yeah, actually. So I'm part of the Brown County Beekeepers Association, and we hold a class every January. So this year it's January 18th, and the class is at the NWTC Great Lakes Energy Center.
Yeah,
so nice. There's three parts to it. So when you go to our website, browncountybeekeepers.com, and it's on your sheet.
Okay.
And or you can just go to our Facebook page, Brown County Beekeepers, and then you can sign up right there for the class. And we have three segments. When you sign up, you'll get a video sent to you to learn about the biology of the bees, because we want you to have a basic knowledge. Because right now is when you need to, if you're going to get into beekeeping this next couple coming year, this is when you have to start. So then we have in class, which is about 4 or 5 hour day at NWTC, and then we teach like all different. There's bunch of us, like I'll teach how to overwinter.
They want to get into bees.
Yep.
And their goal is to get honey, right?
Right.
So is this class needed for that?
Oh, absolutely. Because you can't get honey unless you have a strong, healthy hive. Because what dictates how much honey you get is how many foragers you have. And how many foragers you have dictates by the strength of your queen. So pretty much your entire hive relies on the quality of your queen. Although the worker bees dictate how that quality is. If they don't think she's quality, they'll kill her and make another queen.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's
there's a lot of history to that.
Yeah. And that's another thing. I can see that event happening in my colonies, because I can see the temperature spikes, and I mark my queens. I go in there and I'll paint them green based upon the year, or red. So then when I go in and I say, hey, I think something's going on, they requeened her, and I'll go in, I'll say, yep, there's a queen without any markings on it.
What makes the soldiers turn on the queen?
So the hive is held together. The queen puts out a pheromone, and the strength of that pheromone is related to the health of that queen.
I see.
So when that pheromone starts to dissipate, then they're like, hey, we need to, you know.
I smell a change in the air.
Yep. And
wow.
And then they'll start developing, making their own queens. But right now they can't do that because, you know, they're locked in a hive.
Right.
So when you get to, say, October, whatever you did for them, that's it. You know, there's no, and that's our climate. That's the hard part in Wisconsin and the UP and any cold climate is once October hits, it's done. So if your bees are sick, they're going to die.
That's Wayne Stiegelman from A-Frame Acres. You can check out Mino and the Mayor every weekday morning from 6 until 9 on WISS and WGBW. Up on New Wisco Weekend, a three-man group of gentlemen with a talent for making fun music that spans genres. This is New Wisco Weekend on WISS and WGBW.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
This is New Wisco Weekend. I'm Lisa Hale, your host. Every week, we like to close the show with music. The Gentlemen Grifters are a Wisconsin-based band that twists bluegrass, western, folk, ragtime, and hard rock into unique and fun music. Take a listen.
I was out of fishing on a dark, stormy night. I ventured out too far from land and couldn't see the light. My mates are gone for far too long, I spiraled towards the floor. The mist broke clear and I found my way back to Hacker Shore. Mermaid approached in the haze and offered me her hand. She said that she'd give me safe passage back onto dry land. The clouds of thin, she played a trick upon my weary eyes. And at the time I thought I had in hand a mighty prize. Well, I've been out to sea on many other nights, but the waves had never been quite as bad as tonight. I held onto the rudder as I lay upon the floor. I never should have set a foot upon that Hacker Shore. Back into her den so we could rest a bit. Now worried for my safety as the seated foam is spit. Against my better judgment, I said I'd stay for one more.
The Gentlemen Grifters were guests on Civic Media's Mino and the Mayor show recently. Here's a little bit of their interview.
All right, mine is Mike Goodwin. Not really a leader here. We kind of all do our parts. We all do singing. We all do instruments. So yeah, we've been doing this for a few years. We started around the pandemic, kind of doing things over the internet, passing back and forth before we could really get together in person and not infect everybody.
Well, I like the fact, like we said, this is the most unique, different, not unique, but tell us about the different instruments you have in your trio.
Yeah, well, I've got, we call this a guitar. You don't see these too often.
Except you, Bob. Slow down a little bit. It's John Minor.
All right, wow, here we go.
Over here we got a mandolin, and then we have a violin, a fiddle, I have no idea, some four-stringed instrument.
Oh, banda fiddle.
Yeah.
And violin for, that's a cool instrument. Are you in the high school choir course? What'd you do?
Yeah.
No, I played in heavy metal bands when
really?
I was a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, look at this guy.
And, are you serious?
He could be in the Marines.
Yeah, I'm serious.
You're the most clean cut kid I've ever had in here. Look at these guys. No, if he said it.
This dude.
Yeah, he was in like Death Punch or something.
Yeah, all of them.
He was the choir kid, actually.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay, you guys hide it well. All right. How'd you get into this? And I think that's cool that you play a violin.
I tried a lot of different instruments, and they kept shrinking. I started with drums, and then it went to piano and guitar, and I'm finally down to a fiddle. Maybe I'll get down to a harmonica or something that's even smaller at some point, but I think I'll stick with fiddle.
You can just do what I do, is just do vocals.
Well, that's the thing, Dennis.
When you get to my point, that you're not even a musician anymore, so careful.
But you're a big advocate for people trying different things in music.
Oh, absolutely. Right? It's great for you know, from a learning standpoint. And
well, these guys are so talented. They can pick up an instrument in 2 weeks. They're like a pro.
Well, wait till you hear us.
How about you, choir boy?
So my name's Chris Lalonde.
Hi, Chris.
Yeah, I picked up mandolin about a decade ago, about 10 years. I actually worked with the guitarist for Burnt Toast and Jam.
Yes. We had him in here, haven't we?
Not yet.
No? Okay. Right. Yeah, I worked with him back in the day at a fiberglass shop, and I didn't even know what a mandolin was until I worked at that fiberglass shop. But I started on bass. I taught myself bass when I was 12 and then guitar when I was 14.
How does that translate to the mandolin?
So this is actually tuned just like a fiddle or an upside down bass. And actually one of my buddies was like, oh yeah, it's tuned just like an upside down bass. And I just stared at it for like a good solid hour, flipping all those scales around in my head.
Man, yeah. That's scrambled eggs to me. Can you imagine that?
Wow. Learning it backwards. Sort
pretty
of like,
cool.
Right? That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I thought about it like an upside-down bass for about a month.
Then what happened?
Then it turned into a mandolin.
Okay. That's the spirit.
Yeah. And shout out to Andrew Madsen. He's a luthier down in Neenah. He made this beautiful instrument.
Wow. Andrew is awesome. We got to get him in, too.
Oh, he made that?
Yeah.
All right, you guys. What kind of music do you play? Like, what would be your genre?
Bluegrass primarily, but we
kind
of dabble in a lot of different things.
All right.
Don't you have a big festival in Marquette, like by Ore Dockers? a big bluegrass thing in the summers?
They're too big for that.
That's... Are you? Oh, okay.
I think it's don't use guys.
But bluegrass, bluegrass is big in the UP, isn't it?
They got a blues festival up
there. Blues festival. Yes. Yeah.
That's huge.
Yes, it's very big. Yeah. So let's hear a little something.
All right. Good times.
Tell us about what it is that you're going to play.
The Gentlemen Grifters.
All right, here's a song that's, I guess this is bluegrass, but it's very ragtime inspired.
I love it.
Okay.
That's the best.
Tell the bartender, tell the queen, tell everybody in between. Shout it out from the tops of the trees. Good times are here again. It's time to shake these blues. Put down your phone and turn off the news. Get yourself a pair of dancing shoes. Let this little song be your excuse. So tell the bartender, tell the queen, tell everybody in between. Shout it out from the tops of the trees. And good times are here again. Come on, Chris.
Thank you so much for being a part of New Wisco Weekend, your look at the stories and issues facing Northeast Wisconsin. This issue of New Wisco Weekend is written, produced, and directed by Lisa Hale. Our executive producer is Todd Michaels, with features from Conrad Krieger, Brittany Merlot, Melissa Kay, Joanne Krulatz, and Pete Schwaba. Our commentator is Amanda Nimmer, and we had special appearances this week by John Mino, Jim Schmidt, and Dennis Peters. If you have a story you'd like to hear us cover, please feel free to email us anytime, lisa.hale@civicmedia.us. I'm Civic Media Northeast Wisconsin Bureau Chief Lisa Hale for WISS and WGBW News. Be unstoppable.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.